Blog Talk Radio.
Here we go, Draft Mix. Here we go. Welcome to another edition of the Draft Nation. My name is Joe412, and as always, I'll be your host for the next 30 minutes. But before we begin, we want to thank our longtime sponsor, iHeartMedia, where you can find all your favorite music, radio, and podcasts all for free. And for those of you who haven't listened to the show before, Draft Nation is pretty unique. It's a national e-magazine that hyper-focuses on all four major sports and the professional drafts. So if you like stuff that is involving the draft, we cover all aspects of player scouting. We do our own mock drafts. We cover free agency. We look into your favorite team's salary cap provisions and what they're going to be facing in years to come. And, of course, the needs for your favorite teams in all aspects. And tonight we have our first return guest, Tony Donahue, is joining us from Indianapolis tonight. We had Tony on back in the fall right before NFL season to do a Colts preview and talked about their draft picks and how that might affect the season. But tonight we're taking a little bit of a spin on that, and we're talking about NBA in particular. We're going to do a little bit of a deep dive on a monster trade that happened for the Pacers. And so, Tony, welcome back to Draft Nation, and are you ready to go back on the clock?
Yeah, does this mean that from here on out, moving forward, I can be referred to as Tony317? Is that how that works?
You could be Tony317. You could be Tony D. You could be whatever you want, man. You tell me, and I'm going to say it.
We'll go with Tony317. We'll stick with the area codes of the cities that we belong to.
We'll give you – how about that? We'll go with that. I'm 412, you're 317. All right, 317. The Pacers, monster trade. And for us draft picks sitting on this side of the table, you know, you've got three picks going out. This changes the fortunes and the future of the franchise. There's no way of saying it except they've bought in and they've mortgaged out all the draft capital they've got coming up. And I know that you don't think they're even done yet. But first of all, tell us about the trade. Who was the winner? Who was the loser? Were both winners, both losers? And where do you see the Pacers going here? I mean, what's the overall strategy? And it looks like they're trying to buy some talent here.
Yeah, I think this goes back a little bit further than the actual trade, and it really goes back to guys like Paul George and Victor Oladipo, and the biggest things with those players that obviously were traded for better assets. Is simply the Pacers are willing to make moves to contend in the Eastern Conference. This is a team for years has never gone into the luxury tax, has never wanted to pay that, has always kind of handcuffed themselves. And over the last, 20 years, they went to the NBA Finals against the Lakers in 2000 and had a really good chance, went to the Eastern Conference Finals back in 2014. But other than those two big runs in which, the one in 2014, they had Paul George and he was still on his rookie contract, and they brought in Monte Ellis, who at the time was probably the biggest free agent pickup the Pacers have ever had. Then you picked up a David West who had that veteran presence to him. You had Roy Hibbert on a rookie deal as well. But this really shows the Pacers fans that they're ready to take that next step in the Eastern Conference. They're ready to bring in pieces around Tyrese Halliburton, who they have obviously shown everybody that this is their guy, this is who they're going to build around. They got him in the trade that sent Domantas Sabonis, as everybody knows, to the Kings a few years back, and they made him a max player. And now they've went out and got another guy who's probably going to be a max player in Pascal Siakam. I think it's a great trade for the Pacers. I personally, with this team, maybe not in an overall sense, but with this team, I would rather have a veteran player to go next to a Tyrese Halliburton and a Miles Turner and some of the other pieces on this team. And it says we're ready to win now, as opposed to, well, we'll go get somebody in the draft. We hope it pans out. Here's why the hope it pans out hasn't worked for Pacers fans and Pacer Nation. It's because it hasn't worked out. They've drafted guys like Goga Batase and TJ Leaf and Aaron Holiday, guys that are no longer on this roster that they thought, okay, we've got a 3 to 4 year vision of winning and these guys can develop into those winning players. That simply hasn't happened. Now on the bench, you have last year's first round draft pick in Benedict Mathurin, who has shown signs of being a guy that can start on this team and really push this team forward as another piece. There's also been some growing pains, some times where he hasn't, seemingly got along with Rick Carlisle. There's been some times where, his role has diminished with other players like Aaron Nimhard, a guy they got in the draft. We've seen Ben Shepherd, a guy out of Belmont, who they drafted last year towards the end of the first round, I do believe. Might have been early second round. The pieces are there, but overall, this trade really says we're going to go get an all-star. We're going to go get another player to play alongside Tyrese Halliburton that's going to elevate this team that first and foremost wants to be here. It seems like he wants to be here. It was on his short list of destinations was to come to the Pacers and play alongside Tyrese Halliburton and Miles Turner. Victor Oladipo, when he was, before he was shipped out, it was always he's going to go to L.A. or Miami. Paul George really handicapped his franchise when he said he was going to opt to become a free agent, and then nobody traded for him at the deadline because they knew that they could just make a run at him in free agency instead of having to give up, obviously assets or picks for other players to get Paul George at the deadline. So you'll have to re-sign Pascal Siakam coming up this summer. There still is a chance that he walks, but the Pacers do own his bird rights. Therefore, they can give him an extra year and more money than any other team can give him. And I think at this point in Pascal Siakam's career, that one extra year is worth more. He's 29 years old. If he can be under contract with his Pacers team until he's 34, that'll obviously be his last big contract. And then above all that, too, it's just a player that has championship pedigree. He's been on playoff teams. He's obviously won an NBA championship in Toronto. He's very similar to some of the guys that are on this Pacers team. Their first-round draft pick this year, Jairus Walker, eighth overall pick. They traded down a spot to gain a little bit more one more pick to get the guy that they wanted in Walker. Walker hasn't played too much in the NBA. He's been in the G League. But it's very similar to the path that Pascal Siakam took and going back and forth between the G League and the NBA before he really took off in that Toronto Raptors system. So I think overall it's a great trade for the Pacers. Bruce Bowen, who you gave up, sent to Toronto. You paid him a lot of money, and you wanted him because he just came off of a championship with Denver, brought that pedigree. Just really wasn't working out. He's not a bad guy. He didn't badmouth the organization when he left, and the organization didn't badmouth him on the way out. It just didn't work in the system and what Rick Carlisle wanted to do. And, yes, do you trade a lot of your picks away? You do. But, man, Joe, these picks over the last 10 or 12 years, they've always flirted with being that 8th seed and either making the playoffs or not, and then having the 15th to 22nd pick in the draft, which is led to T.J. Leaf, who didn't pan out, which has led to Goga Batadze, who didn't pan out. Some of these draft picks really haven't panned out. The only two that seemingly have over really the last 5 or 6 years has been Miles Turner and Benedict Mathurin. Mathurin's still on his rookie contract, but man, I think it's great for the Pacers, and it screams more than just a trade to bring in a player.
Well, there's a couple of things in there that I'd like to unpack. I mean, you mentioned, the previous Pacer drafts and the lack of success that they've had there. Mm-hmm. Do you think that gave them license to move that much draft capital here thing? I don't want to say capitulating. That's not the right word, but almost saying, well, these guys have been truly lottery picks. They're lottery tickets. We don't know what we don't know about them. And here we've got a chance to bring in a guy who's a proven winner that we think is going to marry up to the talent that we have on the team that'll make us more than competitive, and then we can make a run over the next few years. And there is some risk. I mean, you mentioned earlier that, he could walk at the end of the year, and they would have given up a lot for not giving, but they do have the ability to extend. They do have the ability to pay above. So there are some things in there that I think will play in their favor. I don't think they would have made it if they didn't think he was going to resign, right? So, but, are they locked and loaded? Are we going to see them make a run this year? I know we're almost at the All-Star game. I mean, are we going to see them make a run this year, or is this a trade for next year and the year after that?
I think, and multiple things come with that, when it comes to trading a guy like Siakam and giving up some of your draft stock, it's one of two things. One, free agents aren't, big name free agents aren't seemingly going to sign in Indiana or in general small town markets, Utah, Memphis, unless you have a superstar that's there. Yes, will the Grizzlies get some mention and some possible free agents because having Ja Morant? Absolutely. And now the Pacers have a guy in Tyrese Halliburton who is young. He's locked up here long term, and he makes everybody around him. I mean, there was a run there over three games where he had 42 assists, one turnover, and like 98 points. I mean, it was incredible. I think only John Stockton had put up numbers like that. I think when this Pacers team made that run in the in-season NBA tournament to the finals in which they lost to the Lakers, I think they looked around and said, okay, maybe we are just one, maybe we're closer than what we think. We've knocked off the Celtics we've knocked off the Milwaukee Bucks 4 out of 5 times this year. They're playing the Celtics tonight. Obviously, the Celtics, the class of the East. The Bucks, who knows what's happening? Obviously, they have superstars and Giannis and Dame, and they've just brought in Doc Rivers. So you kind of look around the East, and it's like, who are you competing against? And it's Boston, Milwaukee, and Philadelphia. And then really fourth on down, I mean, the Knicks are banged up right now. We know Julius Randle is going to be out for a while. You know, you can compete in the East to host a first-round series, maybe even better. And that's going to be huge for this Pacer team, this Pacer franchise that is one of the lowest in attendances on the season. Again, I don't think they're done yet, and we can get into that, but I think this was a trade to say, hey, we are closer than what we thought we were. We brought in some free agents like Obi Toppin, some of our draft capital, Aaron Nimhard, Benedict Mathurin, Ben Shepherd are getting some run. Let's just go see what we got over the next couple of years, gain as much playoff experience as we can this year, in which they've kind of already earned that a little bit in that play, in that in-season play-in tournament, or the in-season tournament. And, yeah, I think this is a big-time run for the upcoming season next year.
Now, you hinted earlier about the fact that you don't think they're done. What are you hearing on the ground there, and or is your spidey sense up? Do you sense something else coming that maybe, you know, being so close to the team and you're getting some, you know, some signals there that no one else is? I mean, what are you hearing? What are you feeling? What do you think they need?
You know, I think you first have to look at Buddy Hield and what situation he is in. It's been inconsistent play out of him so far this season. His defense really lacks, which Pacers score a lot of points, but the Pacers also give up a lot of points. You know, you need to look at Buddy Hield and say, is he somebody that you can trade to a contender, maybe the Lakers, maybe the Clippers, maybe the Suns, that could use another shooter? You know, you look at the Eric Gordon role right now in Phoenix, where he comes in off the bench and, you know, he's putting up 5-6 three-pointers and averaging points a night. You know, could somebody in the West Conference, Bennett, maybe even Denver, you know, whose bench isn't their strong suit, can you maybe then grab another draft pick back for this year? Can you maybe pick up somebody who maybe just needs a change of scenery, which is what they did with Obi Toppin this year? You know, Obi Toppin drafted one of the top draft picks of the New York Knicks, didn't really pan out, showed signs of greatness, and then was very inconsistent at times. He comes over to the Pacers. He's kind of found a new role coming off the bench, you know, getting 17, 20 minutes a night. You know, I think that you first have to look at Buddy Hield. Is there interest on the market for Buddy Hield, which I think that there will be? Is maybe Obi Toppin a guy that would command some interest? You've got Jalen Smith as well. This is a guy that they got in a trade from Phoenix with T.J. Warren a few years ago. He's been up and down. He's been injured. He's a great complement off the bench to Miles Turner. But is Toppin, Buddy Hield, and Jalen Smith three players that other teams might have interest in? I mean, as you know, you always have to take phone calls. You always have to, you know, get feelers out there. But if you can move Buddy Hield and maybe get another young asset that would fit, or maybe even a draft pick that you can either use in another trade or possibly develop if it's a decent enough draft pick, then I think you have to look at pulling the trigger of maybe moving Buddy Hield out of town.
You know, I think you hinted at a few things there that they're reasonable. You know, this isn't like pie in the sky fandom. This is legit. I mean, and I think that helps, you know, when people listen to the show, it really helps them to understand that, hey, this is a realistic deal. There's room to move here. And I do like your idea of them maybe even swapping for younger or more, you know, getting some of that draft capital back. But let me, you know, move from the myopic to, you know, more 30,000-foot view here of the league. I'll say generally, who you got in the East, who you got in the West, I know we're coming around the final turn here, getting close to the playoffs, and I think teams are going to, you know, really start to focus in. You know, I'm not asking you to predict the finals, but, you know, you started talking about the East a little bit and how the Pacers could fit in there and even host a home series, if not better. But who do you realistically see coming out? Like, if you had one or two teams in the East, one or two teams in the West, you know, who are your favorites at this point?
Yeah, I think, you know, Boston obviously comes to mind. 21-2 at home. They finally lost a game at home a week and a half ago on a Friday night to Denver. I think everything's going to have to go through Boston. They're four games ahead of Milwaukee. You know, how do the Bucks adapt now with Doc Rivers out? You know, that firing to me kind of screamed Dame and Giannis came together and said, we want to move on from who we have, from Griffin, and let's go get somebody who has that championship pedigree. As far as the 76ers go, I mean, look, if Embiid goes for 70 a night, you know, they're going to be unstoppable. It's obviously not going to happen. Tyrese Maxey's been banged up as well.
Incredible. 70 is like Chamberlain kind of stuff. I mean, you're starting to get, like, stratosphere, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, obviously, as you know, a lot of it depends on health. You know, where is Miami? This is a team that has made deep runs in the playoffs, being the 8th seed, being the 7th seed. I mean, any team that's coached by Eric Spoelstra can never be, counted out. Whereas Cleveland, that is Donovan Mitchell, that guy with Jared Allen that can move them forward. I think everything in the East goes through Boston. As far as the West go, I mean, there's two teams that really come to mind is, you know, are they contenders or are they pretenders? And that's hard to say when they're first and third in the West. You've got Minnesota and you've got Oklahoma City with young superstars. They just don't have that valuable playoff experience that a team like Denver has, that a team like the Clippers have with Harden and Westbrook and, you know, obviously Kawhi Leonard, who's won a championship and has gone deep. You know, Phoenix is going to be better towards the end of the year than what their 27-20 record shows right now. The Lakers are still going to be a force to reck with. I mean, and even Golden State was on the outside looking in. Are they going to be able to make a move at the deadline to maybe bring some help in? Is maybe a guy like Buddy Hield, is that somebody that they could need? I mean, Klay Thompson kind of on the backside of his career. He's been up and down. Chris Paul really hasn't panned out the way that the Warriors have wanted to. You know, I'm going to, if you want me to give a finals prediction right now, it's going to be Denver versus Boston, but I'm interested to see what some of these younger teams, what Anthony Edwards and the Timberwolves can do, what Oklahoma City can do. Obviously, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, there's a lot of great pieces that he has there in Oklahoma City. Do they have what it takes to make a deep playoff run, knowing that they're not an experienced team when it comes to the playoffs, but they do have great players that are still young. You know, they kind of remind me of the Pacers. I think they're a year ahead of maybe where the Pacers think that they want to be. Obviously, you know, when you have the number one pick in Chet Holmgren playing well, Dort still stepping up. My biggest concern with Oklahoma City is experience in their bench, but that's kind of a blueprint that the Pacers have. You know, we got this young superstar. Let's build. Let's get some other former top five, top 10 picks around him and see what we can do. And I think the Thunder are where the Pacers want to be in a year from now.
So as we're nearing the trade deadline here, I think it's, if memory serves, we're looking at the 8th of February. We're only, what is that, next week almost, you know, maybe 10 mm-hmm. days away, less than that. Do you see any, just monster moves like we saw the Pacers make? Do you see something out there? Do you see teams just here at the end, a lot of talk and, you know, just, you know, no steak, a lot of sizzle? Are we going to see something serious and someone else try to buy themselves a shot at the championship?
Yeah, I think it comes down to three teams that are kind of out of it right now, and it's the Hawks, the Bulls, and the Jazz. I mean, if any team can go out and get a Lauri Markkanen who is averaging 25 points a game this season, I mean, that's huge. That makes your team better immediately, you know, and if you're a team like Golden State or you're a team that is right there trying to get, you know, the Lakers trying to get back into the playoff hunt, that's a guy that immediately comes to mind. Other guys that immediately come to mind, will the Bulls move on from LaVine? Is that somebody that can go and help a team right now? Will the Hawks with Murray, you know, Deontay Murray, who is a guy that can score at will, but has been in trade talks all season long. You know, he's got a lot left on his contract, and somebody like the Lakers take him on to bring in another scorer. And same with the Hawks with Bogdanovic. I mean, that's the guy that is a pure shooter that can get you 20 a night. He's averaging, I think, 20 a night this season. Is he somebody that, you know, a veteran team can bring in and use his shooting? Another guy that comes to mind, too, that I think could be dealt is Malcolm Brogdon from the Blazers. He's kind of bounced around after being traded out of Indiana. Does he land on a team maybe like the Warriors to be able to distribute that ball to Clay and Steph Curry? Is he a guy that, you know, could maybe move to the Kings, a team that's in, you know, the midst of trying to make the playoffs to back up, you know, a De'Aaron Fox? So I think we'll see a lot of movement at the deadline. I really do.
I mean, do you think the Kings are for real? I mean, they just seem to kind of be flirting. I don't know. I mean, do you think they've got a shot of making it here in the end, or will they have to make a move to get that shot, or are they just going to fade?
Yeah, I think you do have to make a move. You know, De'Aaron Fox, obviously, you know, one of the top tier point guards in the league right now. Domantas Sabonis.
Yeah, but like, is he enough though? Like, that's the thing. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but go ahead. I apologize.
Yeah, and I don't think that duo of De'Aaron Fox and Sabonis is enough to get you out of the West. I mean, there is some inconsistent play off the bench. You know, in some of their, like, Malik Monk, is he a guy that can step up and get you 15 a night? If Harrison Barnes is on the back end of his career, a guy, Kevin Huerter, those type of players have to step up. And, you know, if you just ask, you know, a random NBA fan on the street, they're just going to tell you Harrison Barnes, he's just a guy. Kevin Huerter, he's just a guy. Trey Lyles, who's from here in Indianapolis, who's kind of came on in his career over the last year or two. But again, he's just a guy. You know, you got to have a third or even a fourth guy at times that can take over a basketball game. And I just don't think Sacramento has that right now.
Let's switch gears a little bit. You and I off air were talking a little bit about, you know, this is the time of year where you get the Senior Bowls and you get all of the post NCAA football season bowls where some of these, whether they're seniors or players that have decided to come into the draft, go out and it's like pre-combine, right? They get a chance to work with some NFL coaches. They get a chance to show themselves off against other talent, especially guys from lesser conferences playing up. But I know you're out in Indiana, and there's a couple of guys that are coming out of Notre Dame that are not named Joe Alt. They're plan on showing up at some of these to make a name for themselves as they get ready for the combine at the end of February and their own pro day. Is there anybody that you see that you're looking forward to seeing over the next week in these practices and in these sort of exhibition games that excite you, whether it's Dame or not? I throw Dame out there because I know they're, you know, regionally, out your way. But, you know, ultimately, is there someone there that you think needs to step up or someone that you're expecting to step up or be challenged by that next level of practice against some of the guys, the best of the best that are going to the next level?
Yeah, I think this game itself is just it's more important than, you know, insert random bowl game here, right? Like whatever you want to call it, the Popeyes Bowl or, you know, even the Sun, you know what I mean? Like, this is, you've got a better chance to get eyes on you here to go perform against guys that, you know, deserve to be there that are going to be of the utmost competition that maybe you wouldn't get in some of these bowls. As far as Notre Dame goes, you know, Sam Howell is obviously a guy that's going to come to mind. You know, he came to Notre Dame as one of the top yardage-wise quarterbacks from Wake Forest. Where does he fit? Is, you know, he's drawn some comparisons to a Brock Purdy, which I guess right now is a compliment, right? He's going to go start the Super Bowl, but if it's a comparison of what he looked like at the Senior Bowl, he ended up being Mr. Irrelevant, as we know. So we'll see him down there. It should be interesting. Some of the Notre Dame guys, Leafu is a guy that I think is going to be a really good player in the NFL. Can he have a big week down there? I believe so. It's going to be fun to watch. Cam Hart, as you mentioned, obviously just a massive talent. that's going to have a chance to maybe move up the draft boards with this before his day. So, I mean,
he's
looking forward to it.
Good, man. He is sneaky good. I'm telling you, that guy is underrated. In a class that has a bunch of talent coming out, that's a guy that people aren't talking about. And this Senior Bowl week, the Shrine Bowl stuff, that's where people can make a difference. And then the coaches don't want to talk about it. They want to see it, and then, we're not telling anybody. We're not going to see, please don't do well. You know, stop doing what you're doing. We don't want anybody to know, right? But I didn't interrupt you yet. Cam Hart's one of those guys. I want to see how he does.
Yeah, I think that he's a guy that obviously played really well for Notre Dame. At times was even under the radar, which is kind of crazy to say. But, it's funny, earlier today he was on the opposite side of Sam Hartman. I think he ended up intercepting him, if I saw the highlights correctly. It's going to be interesting. And, as you mentioned, it's a great way for some of these, players at mid-major schools that maybe didn't get the attention because they played in the New Orleans Bowl or in the Poinsettia Bowl or whatever bowl, to come out and show that, they can actually compete and move themselves up or even in some cases down on the draft boards.
Look, man, we're coming to the end of the show. I only have a few minutes left here, and I've got to ask two questions. The first one's the most important one. Are you or are you not a Swiftie?
that's a good question. I'm not.
Well, the reason I asked is question number two. I'll take you off. You don't have to answer that. I'm not going to put you on the spot. But with the Taylor Swift Bowl that's coming up here in 2 weeks, I don't think it surprised anybody that we have the 49ers versus the Chiefs. I mean, the Chiefs have been just rolling the last 5 years, and you get this little kind of rematch coming up with the Niners. The Niners are loaded. It's hard. I don't know who's going to win in this. I have to really sit down and think about it, because I think the Chiefs can match them offensively, but I'm not sure they can match them defensively. So I'm going to give the edge to the Niners, but it's, with the Kelce Swift Bowl thing that's happening, it doesn't surprise me that they ended up, carrying this over. I'm surprised she doesn't go on with Usher at halftime. But who do you got, and why do you got them?
It's funny. Throughout all of our contests in the playoffs on the Fans Place app, I've picked the Chiefs, and I've picked Travis Kelce to score a touchdown. I do have I placed a bet last year after the Super Bowl. It was a $50 free bet on the Chiefs to come back and win this year. So I'm obviously pulling for that. I've always liked Patrick Mahomes. I'm glad that the whole Taylor Swift thing hasn't really became a distraction. I think they're 9-3 in games that she's attended.
How do you know that?
I guess I read a lot of the internet's a hell of a drug. Uh-huh. I guess you read a lot of it.
That sounds like someone that's betting.
I look at it like this. Is it annoying that they constantly show her? And I think she's annoyed that they constantly show her. But look, anybody in a supporting relationship that wants to go out and support their boyfriend or their girlfriend, and it's showing a lot of young men and women that are growing up watching the game what it's like to support your significant other, I can't say anything negative about that. I think the Chiefs win the Super Bowl. I think it's going to be close. If the Niners play in the first half like they have against the Packers, who are an upstart team, and the Lions, who I think are a flash in the pan, the Chiefs will put them away. And the Chiefs will absolutely put them away. They're too good. They're too experienced. I think if that was an Eagles team playing against the 49ers, obviously the Eagles didn't look as good as what they've been, down the stretch this year. But an experienced team with playoff pedigree, I think, they wouldn't have gotten to the Super Bowl. Again, they got to a Lions team, flash in a pan. It really doesn't – obviously the pressure of being in the second NFC championship of that franchise. And then a Packers team who I'm a fan of, I think is going to be good over the next several years, but just too many young players in a tough road environment. You get out big, and then obviously CMC. I mean, make Brock Purdy beat you. Make those weapons not named Christian McCaffrey beat you. I'm going to take the Chiefs. Your first prediction, I'm going to give it to the Chiefs here, 31-27.
Well, Tony 317 from Joe 412's Heart, thanks again for coming on the show. And a big thanks to our sponsor, iHeartMedia, where you can find all your favorite music, radio, and podcasts all for free. Tony, welcome back anytime. Let's talk about this in a few months when we get back into draft season. Have you on the show again, and we'll go from there. And remember, for everyone who's listening, when Draft Nation's off the air, we're still always on the clock for you. Thanks again, Tone.
See you guys. Thanks for having me.
All right. You got it, man.